Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, February the 21st, 2019. It's 8 a.m. in New York, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, 1 p.m. in London. Sydney, Australia is at 12 midnight, but wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. It's a happy day for me, I can tell you, because I always get happy when I get a chance to talk to my longtime friend Joel Elston, because we never know where the conversation's going to go. Sometimes it gets influenced by live stream listeners who have questions that they bring in, but even if that doesn't happen, I mean, all I have to do is just mention one topic to him, and I might not get a word in for the next half hour, so I figured I'd get in now, say hello, thank you, Joel, and how you doing?
I am doing great, Walt. I hope you're doing well. We've had, you mentioned we've been doing this a long time, and,
yes.
And I really, as I say every week, I'm grateful for the opportunity. If it's just you and I talking, I'm just grateful for that, much less anything else going on. So
yeah.
It's always good to be here on a Thursday morning.
Oh, it's fun. It really is. I mean, I was kind of making fun there for a moment, but I love it. It's just great. You said, you hope I'm doing well, and I'm doing better is probably the better way to say it. As our regular listeners know, I was dealing with the flu over the weekend, and it took me 36 hours to finally remember while being sick that I actually have the power to get well, which I started to do. My wife and I both got sick at the same time. We both remembered around the same time. We both started working on it around the same time, and 24 hours later, we were better. But it just goes to show you all the different ways that resistance can pop into your life that you don't expect, and that was one I didn't expect. I thought I would, you know, I've been practicing this stuff for a while now. I thought surely, you know, as soon as I started feeling symptoms, it would come to my mind, oh, yeah, I have the power to control all this. I have the power to overcome this. No, that's not what happened at all. So I figured, well, let's talk about resistance because that's what that's all about. And I also mentioned to you before the show that I was pretty sure that I kind of made myself sick and that I did it because of fears that I have about these local workshops that I'm trying to set up some testing on and so forth. Once again, resistance rearing its ugly head. Saying, oh, okay, so if you're afraid, I'm going to make you really, really upset. I'm going to make you feel really bad. I'm going to make you sick. Resistance is an incredible thing, isn't it?
Well, it's a defense mechanism, and it's the body, the term that I use frequently, and I've used this word already a couple times today, is the concept of homeostasis. The body or the mind or the brain is always seeking to just stay where they're at. I would rather be not really happy, but comfortable and safe versus what happy will require change, or this new venture or this new idea will require change.
Right.
So the body's natural reaction to change is always, no, I'm sorry, that's a danger zone. And resistance is almost always associated with yes, but what if I do become successful? What if this happens? What will that look like? How will that change? And it is created as unfortunately, we have developed it as a protective technique. We talk in terms of resistance of like, oh no, that will never work, or this plan can't work, or whatever we put up there. There's a resistance to protect yourself from the concept of failing or not being able to, because again, failure is always bad, right? Struggle is always bad. And these narratives that we have sort of are the built in part of resistance to, just like you're saying, you have an incredible idea that we've talked about, what you're working on, and you're really moving forward with that. But when you do that, this is so far from your original comfort zone that your resistance to that like you're saying, I realize there's scientists out there who are going to go, no, Joel, he got the flu. Well, yes, he got the flu. And I understand you got the flu, but within the concept of the flu, how your body's responding to the flu virus is where the resistance is.
Mm.
I heard this study the other day that probably 35% of the people that never experienced the flu in a year actually had the flu, and they just didn't allow it to get them sick. It just truly, they didn't have time to be sick. They just moved on. And they might have, I've had periods where huh, well, I might be getting the flu. And I go to bed and I wake up and I'm great. Now, I don't know if I had the flu or didn't have the flu. It's just not in my, I didn't have time for it. I'm not going to, you know, you get the understanding where I'm going.
Yeah.
And those that are with the flu right now, I'm not being critical of you and your thought process. I'm just simply saying pretty much what we give power to is what we attract. As we know, not pretty much what we give power to or what thought to we attract. And the resistance is built into that. It's a protective mechanism that actually doesn't protect us.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't actually protect us. Well, it does in kind of a distorted way. I mean, you talked about how I have this project I'm working on, and somehow my mind thought that it needed to protect me. And I was thinking about one particular way just now. I was thinking about one particular way that it tried to do that. I had been envisioning, because I wanted to do visualizing, right? I wanted to attract a big audience and, you know, a lot of people interested in doing the workshop, all that kind of thing. So I set a really grandiose goal. I said, 250 people showing up for the first workshop, which would be wonderful. That'd be a home run, grand slam, you know? And as soon as I got myself to feel excited about that, you know what my mind did? My mind took me to imagining one person in that audience having all kinds of issues that they were bringing into the place that they really didn't want to have to fix. They just wanted to have people feel sorry for them. And suddenly all the attention went to them. And despite the fact that I had this huge room here, my attention went to them, and I completely forgot about the big room, and I started fretting and getting all upset about, oh, how are we going to help this person, and oh, it's going to be beyond what we can do because we're really not set up for it, and it just turned into a negative spiral. And I'm thinking, how the hell did I do that?
Yeah. And that, by the way, that's a pretty complex resistance.
Yeah, really.
Good job. I mean, you really went out there. And that becomes the idea that happens is we anticipate. I have given almost that identical resistance power before. I was giving a talk when I first started doing some public speaking. I was speaking to a group of psychiatrists and psychologists at a medical association meeting.
Yeah.
And I was going to be talking about the law of attraction and thought process and energy vibration to a bunch of scientists. And, I automatically was just saying, okay, now they're going to trip me up here. They're going to make me look bad. They're going to just, and I had this envision of where the, and I was almost canceled that. And, and sure enough, the first question after I gave my little talk about, thought, energy, vibration and law of attraction. And I had this one doctor that sort of, it wasn't a confrontational question, but it was, questioning, because I will use some of Dr. Daniel Amen's brain change scans about positive. There's all kind of positive thought or, how you can change your brain to and so this doctor started questioning the science of that.
Hmm.
And I found myself, my face became like, it felt like it became flush and I almost got into a real defensive mode. And I listened to his question, but his question was actually him. I heard it differently. He was looking for something to help break his resistance because he obviously was interested in the concept.
Oh.
And he ended his question with, I do admit my patient's attitude is a massive factor in their healing. So I'm not discounting what you're saying. I'm just looking for something to help me feel. And so he actually took the pressure off.
Yeah.
And my resistance disappeared. And I was able then to say, I can, and I started with a concept of, and I do this with everyone. Let me start with this works for me.
Mm.
This has worked and continues to work for me. So I'm going to just start with that. You can debate whether it works or not, but I have fully bought into the fact that it works for me.
Yeah.
So that alone is supporting what he's already saying.
Right.
So your resistance when you're thinking about that, no matter who stands up or what situation they bring, you are going to be able to say, look, we can't, I can't go in the room with 250 people and sit here and break everybody's resistance down and do that. It's just not going to work today. However, the concept will be out there and that person, no matter where they're on their journey, will be able to eventually find their resistance. and be able to respond to it. But you're not going to be able to break, you know, we have people that listen to the show that are skeptical. I don't mind them listening. I want them to be skeptical.
Sure.
I don't want them just to randomly hop in here and believe what we're saying. I want it to work in their lives and then be able to testify, so to speak, that it works in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. That, because that's the best kind of growth to have. When we're in the place where we're asking somebody else to do the growing for us, that's where we don't really get anywhere. But the kind of person you're describing is saying, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, just how do I get there? And they're the best kind of listener to have, really. They're golden. They're like, I don't care whether you're talking on a podcast or to a live audience or just writing in a book. That's the best listener to have.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, one of the I listen to a few podcasts of with different topics, and I'm very much into this. There's a term called biohacking and sort of a health, you know, a brain kind of a healthy brain kind of mentality. And there's a guy named Ben Greenfield. He has a podcast, and he is what I love about what this guy does is he has some really strong opinions. However, his willingness to listen to and even change his perspective and mind based on evidence and fact is awesome.
Mm.
And now it's not just an opinion. And so his willingness to look and discuss it is great.
Right.
But it does help to sit there and sort of dissect it and, you know, here's my resistance. What am I stuck with? Because sometimes the resistance, or not the inability to hear another opinion, is the part of the resistance. Because life will bring you the perspective you need if you're open to receiving it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And we actually have a question from the audience, which is this is kind of a record for us. We normally don't get one this early on our Thursday shows, but that's okay. Siraj is saying he too was feeling flu effects from the last few days, but he asks, is it an effect of full moon for spiritually awake people? And I'm going to actually try to do something I don't normally do. Normally I defer to you to go first, but I really want to go first on this one. And then you can come in with your much more well-informed answer than mine. But my reaction to Siraj is, no, I don't think it's full moon for spiritually awake people. I think it's what you're thinking about. And the reason I say that is that's what it was for me. It was what I was thinking about. It wasn't because of some outside influence. I was doing it to me. And it pisses me off to have to admit that, but that's what I was doing. It was me. I was the one who was making myself sick. And we were just talking about how I made myself sick over this workshop thing that I'm trying to put together that I really didn't have to make myself sick over, but I did. I mean, I described how I was visualizing this really great scene, and then I turned my vision into a really bad scene. That's me. I did that.
Mm.
It wasn't something else. It wasn't the moon. That was me. I mean, I'm not saying that there can't be a moon influence or, you know, some other influence on spiritually aware people. I'm just saying I did that, and I take full ownership of it. So that's my answer. What do you think, Joel?
Mm. Well, I think the moon had everything to do with it, if you believe the moon had everything to do with it. It's just that simple. It's just what you're saying. If the moon is influencing your world and you believe that, it really is. If you believe you're influencing your, it's where your thoughts go. It's where your belief is. The concept, one of the things that I don't know why this happens for me. I'll give you another sort of opposite kind of thing. Friday the 13th is considered a bad luck day, or I don't know what they call it, something like that. It's, you know, whatever.
Right.
And a lot of people look at, I don't know why, but Friday the 13th has historically been awesome for me. I look for Friday the 13th, and I'm just like, my God, there's something good that happens every Friday the 13th. Now, I don't know why, but I have a proclivity to think that the Friday the 13th is good. I am a believer in where you go. And I'm not discounting anybody's belief. But I do believe your beliefs influence that. And if you believe the moon influences your world, it does. If you really believe strongly that you are in charge of the influences of your life. And I'm saying,
right.
I'm supporting what you're saying.
Right.
But it is so much that the idea that there's other factors in place. My son Chris, years ago, we were in Florida and he had, he was on a medication to help him sleep. He was on a really strong, this is before we got everything adjusted, he was a very strong ADHD medication during the day, and he had often had trouble sleeping at night. Mm-hmm. So they had a medication that would help him sleep at night, which I wasn't a big fan of all that, but right. That's what we were doing at the time.
Right.
And so we went to Florida, and I forgot his medication.
Oh.
And so we were down there, and it was Saturday evening, I believe. We're at my parents' house, and he's like, "Dad, I'm not going to be able to go to sleep. They didn't have my medication." And I could have really, you know, figured out how to get him some of the medication that, whatever. Or I said, "Son, I'll tell you what I'm going to do." I said, "Please don't tell anybody this, but I'm going to give you some of Dad's sleep medication. And it is very strong. It's for adults. And I'm going to cut it in half. I'm going to give it to you. And you're probably not going to be able to stay awake very long, so I want you to go ahead and get in bed and be ready to fall right asleep." So he's like, "Okay, Dad, I promise I won't tell anybody." So I kept selling that concept. So I took my quote-unquote sleep medication. I cut it in half, and I gave it to him with a little warm milk. And I said, "Son," he was out for the night. I mean, unconscious. Now, the sleep medication was actually a 250 milligram vitamin C pill. He woke up the next morning and said, "Dad, that's the best medication. Can I go on now?" Well, I just discontinued or called the doctor to make sure it would be a problem to discontinue what he was on. Said, "No problem." And to this day, Chris takes a half a 250 milligram vitamin C pill every night before he goes to bed. And he's a grown man now.
Right.
And it helps him sleep. He believes with all his heart that helps him sleep. Nothing will convince him that isn't the case.
Which is
and
good.
It helps him sleep.
Yeah.
Fact. And so I don't discount anyone's belief. I know some very dear friends, because I'm very much in the metaphysical studies and stuff like that, and a lot of people are very much in agreement with the moons. There's a lot of evidence I used to work in crisis centers, and I cannot explain why there's an increase in activity on full moons mm-hmm. with people with mental issues. It's fact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that fact because we're anticipating it, or I don't know if that fact is there something, but the moon does appear, or full moons do appear to have an effect on that. So much so, we used to increase our staffing on the evenings of full moons. Now, did our intake people realize it's a full moon and tend to put more people in because it's what they anticipated? I don't know.
Who knows?
But I also know that your beliefs are what drive, at the end of the day, what you give value to is or what you really believe. And so I am supporting that there's a million different directions to go with that. But I do believe, Walt, what you're saying, that once you woke up and realized, wait a minute, you're in control of that, period.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you believe it, then it's true. And that's what I think is the great lesson from all of this. I mean, modern medicine has, totally convinced itself that it is able to identify the germs that create our diseases and, what cures there are for them. And, they have this condition that produces that, and they're able to treat it in this way, and they get that kind of positive result, and they can show all the statistics showing how under the double-blind studies they produce these results. And I think all that's perfectly valid and perfectly fine. And I think it fits perfectly as well with the idea that the human mind creates all this stuff. I mean, not only did the human mind create the idea to treat these things as germs and conditions and so forth and cures and so forth, but the human mind also created the actual conditions themselves and created the cures. The state of being cured happened in the mind. So all of it is true. And none of it really in any way, overrules the other. It's all part of the same basic concept. So like you said, if you find that there is a correlation between a full moon and more mental patients, then you're right. There is a correlation between the full moon and more mental patients. Doesn't really matter exactly how that happened. It's still, you're right.
Yes. Yeah. And that's if you go on my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, which is a public thing anybody can look at, my posts 30 minutes before we went on air, having no idea that topic would come up.
Of course.
The last post is correlation does not equal causation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the concept that you can't always say that, you know, it's where, you know, on the internet, when people talk about vaccines cause autism, the connections will be made on something, then people start looking for those things to, come about, you know, and they start saying, okay, well, here's where that took place. There's studies in physics, you know, double split theories and stuff like that, where energy doesn't always respond. You're like, what, the double slit experiment. I mean, it is amazing. Somebody researched that.
Right.
You know, that when you're observing an experiment, it can have a different effect than when you're not observing it. What does that mean? You're influencing that situation. Again, the bottom line that I think we try to get to every week, no matter how we present it, and I love this when you can do it. Your energy is what you're attracting. Mm-hmm. Controlling what you're feeling is going to be the law of attraction. Is, I have said something in the past that I have to go back on, because sort of readjust my thinking on. I used to always equate sort of positive psychology to the law. It's a piece of the law of attraction.
Yeah.
But the law of attraction is neither positive nor negative.
Right.
One thing that really helps me with that, or helps me sort of define that, positive psychology reinforces what I believe in the law of attraction from my perspective.
Yeah.
But if I look at politics and what politics has become, it is the ultimate example of the law of attraction, not necessarily caring whether it's positive or negative. In fact, negative has an equal power to the positive when used in the law of attraction. I mean, it the law of attraction gives no value to the good or bad.
Right.
You put it out there, that's what you're attracting.
Right.
And, you know, no matter what your politics, no matter where you're believing, and I've really evolved in my politics, I just don't really do it anymore. I'm not anything. I don't think that way anymore.
Yeah, you and me
but
both.
I watch from a non-emotional standpoint, and I look at, you know, what it's become, and, you know, whether it's President Trump or the other side, negative energy or that negative thought is a great influencer in bringing about it. It's simply a very powerful tool. The law of attraction is exceptionally powerful. The reason we talk on the positive side of it, I have found using the positive side of it, using the positive thought process, gives me more things to do. I am not a fan. It's sort of like using the dark side to me brings a lot of darkness, and it's not a place I want to be.
Right.
But yet I can very much identify. It is effective, and I think that's whether it's the moon or it's a certain date. You know, my next week, 7 days from today, and actually it'll be the anniversary. We can talk about this next week. 7 days from today, my son TJ's birthday, my son who had passed away, that's his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 28th of February has no value to me before he was in my life. Then
right.
It was my son's birthday. And then after he passed away, then it has more the 28th is just another day. However, it's also a very poignant day in my life.
Right.
And so I give it power. Then the other person has no value to that day. It's just another day. And so it where my energy goes with that is what matters. We
yes.
attract what we're feeling. And that message, we talk about it every week in some different form or fashion. Resistance is where you are applying, you know, it's a protective mechanism that's not protecting, but it's protecting from the change that comes with what we're trying to attract. We always want to stay, our subconscious wants to stay safe. And as nasty as it may be where we're at, I just want to stay safe is mm-hmm. what my instinct is.
Mm-hmm.
And stepping out of that comfort zone means you will change.
Yes.
And when you weren't feeling well, you love this concept that we're talking about what you're doing. I think it's going to be very successful for you. However, it's so against your base personality over the years, that resistance exists, and you're having to fight through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was finding a number of different ways I was trying to fight through it. But I think you're absolutely right. And I think it is very important to remember that the law of attraction is much more than positive psychology. There's a great deal of overlap. There's a huge amount of overlap.
Yeah.
But positive psychology focuses primarily on what happens when you're in a positive mindset, whereas law of attraction applies with any mindset. And I agree with you. I mean, the way I would say it is, I think that the reason why we spend so much time on the positive side is because we want to have a direct influence over what we attract into our lives so that we like it, so that we like what comes in. We prefer it. You know, we really don't want a whole lot of the stuff that we don't prefer. We want the stuff that we prefer. So that's why we focus on the positive side. Doesn't mean that the negative side doesn't work. It just means it doesn't bring us what we want. So that's the big distinction for me.
Well, and one of the things, and I'll use my negative side. You know, when I was in the middle of addictive behavior and I was in a downward spiral of compulsive gambling, and I was anticipating losing money, I was anticipating going to jail, I was anticipating, and I lived in that downward vortex that I couldn't control. I watched it happen, and I felt I had no control over it.
Yeah.
And it just, my worst fears came about.
Yes.
And once I was able to realize that's the negative side for me. We talked about, again, President Trump. I don't know where this is going. I actually think his presidency is a positive because of what the effects of his presidency will eventually do overall.
I agree 100%.
And that's a whole other.
I totally agree.
That's a whole other day of discussion.
Yeah.
But you see this, where he has to bark at everything that barks at him, and he's obsessed with all these different, you know, his biggest supporters can see his narcissistic side.
Mm-hmm.
They can admit it, maybe, that
maybe.
They can see that narcissistic side of him.
Yeah.
And when you break that apart and you realize however this is going to end for him, it's going to not end with, you know, there's going to be about at best about 50% of the people really having a much worse view of him than they ever did before he was president.
Oh, at best, yeah.
So his need to be viewed as this great guy, which I really think is sincere, and he just doesn't know how to do it,
right,
is going to actually have the end result be the opposite, even though he's very much, you know, I don't know of another public official that I've ever seen to have such thin skin that just can't let any argument go against it.
Yeah.
And so, again, I'm not trying to, you know, any of our pro-Trump guys, not disrespecting. He's effective. He's one of the most effective manifestors
of anyone
I've ever met.
Absolutely.
And it's just, I don't think it's going to have the payoff in the end for him. So that's where the negative side goes. I was exceptionally good at manifesting the negative stuff. I didn't know I was doing it, but I certainly brought about everything I feared. I certainly brought about everything that, you know, my resistance toward, you know, toward the negative was not there. I was just piling on, and so I learned to do the negative side real easy.
Absolutely.
I think it's why I've sort of come around on this side of it. So it is a very, resistance is, you know, it is the answer when you ask what is going, if you can find the resistance and the under, it 99% of the time, you're going to say, aha, there's the resistance, and here's the reason I'm resisting.
Yeah. I would say that what Trump is going through right now is, even though the events are different, the overall pattern is totally reminiscent of what you went through when you were on your negative spiral, where you were convinced that everything was going to go wrong, you were going to go to prison, all this kind of stuff. I mean, and you kept focusing on all those negatives, and sure enough, they just kept reinforcing themselves. And that's exactly what Trump does. I mean, there's really such a perfect parallel going on there. So you can just see where it's going. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that part out. And it's pretty clear where it's all headed. But it's fascinating how when we're in the middle of it, we can't really see it until we learn how this whole process works. And as much as he is a good, deliberate creator, I think this is part he still hasn't quite figured out. He hasn't quite figured out the role that he plays in attracting this stuff into his life, and that all he really has to do is shift his thought process, which he's very skilled at doing. He just isn't doing it.
If I could, if I could go be his advisor and him actually listen to someone,
that'd be something.
And if he Yeah, that wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, right.
I think he has a unique opportunity in life right now to really, if he could really understand where he's at and his great skill set in this this arena of sort of bringing about and manifesting stuff, if he could just, it's not as big of an adjustment as you would think. I think he could, even at this late date, can make an incredible turnaround as president.
Oh, sure.
I really do.
Yeah.
Because he's really good at it. But right now, he's unintentionally bringing about, his big fear is he will be exposed as not being smart or not being as wealthy and so all that, his self-esteem is so based on his image, but yet the same things he's spewing out there is 50%. That I have a one that's probably less divisive. One of the great company success stories in the world, I believe, I grew up watching this happen. In Florida, there's a grocery store chain called Publix.
Mm-hmm.
And it started in a town 3 miles from where I lived. It was this single little grocery store, turned into this massive Fortune 500 company. They're exploding across the South and up the Northeast, and eventually I anticipate there'll be a nationwide chain if they choose to be. It's really good. One thing in Florida, if you're in Florida listening or you're down there, you can't drive down any main thoroughfare and not pass a Publix every few miles. They're just everywhere.
Yeah.
They're the main grocery store.
Right.
They have great customer service. And until the last year or two, they've universally been viewed as a great company for no matter which side you're looking at.
Uh-huh.
Well, Publix has made one mistake in the history of me watching them grow. Last year, they supported a candidate, their hometown candidate, and they made it public when public disclosures of money coming in comes from public. Now, the truth is they were supporting this candidate. He's from their hometown. That's the truth why they were supporting it. And I forget the guy's name. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
But what happened was this guy is, he leans very hard to the right. He's an NRA supporter. And so all of a sudden that just became a big, massive debate. Now, all of a sudden Publix went from this universally viewed, beautiful company to 50% of the people now are even more interested. Oh, Publix is great because they stand up for the NRA. But they had 50% of the people who are on the other side of it that now dislike them or think they're politically viewed. It's their biggest mistake they've ever made.
Yep.
Not because they're right or wrong. We can debate that. But they've allowed themselves to be drawn into a very divisive issue. Instead of being that middle ground company that we want to serve everybody, we're going to give customer service to everybody, and you'll see it, but they're viewed differently now because they've jumped on board with the wrong stuff. So again, perspective is everything. That what we're trying to incorporate into our lives often will have a reverse effect when we realize letting go of all the other stuff, avoiding the resistance. Or first of it, you can't avoid resistance at first. You got to identify resistance and then, learn to work around the resistance. Or that next level stuff is learn to, resistance. Once you become quick at identifying it, you will have a quicker path to manifesting what you want. Then you can attack it more. You've done that. You've done really good at finding your resistance lately.
I'm getting better at it. That's for sure. And it certainly helps. Yeah. To have had times where I was in that really good, that high vibration place or in the vortex, as Abraham calls it, to have that experience, because when you get that kind of experience, it kind of reinforces, I really do know how to do this. Yeah, okay. And I know what I did. Right. I know how I got here. That's good. That's good. Sarah actually commented about this general idea about 15, 20 minutes ago. She says it was about the moon. We were talking about the moon back then. She says, I'm loving the moon.
Right.
I'm having a blast with it. I've never felt this good and positive before. I'm nearly at the end of The Magic by Rhonda Byrne. And, oh, my God, why have I never seen or sought this book before? That's the feeling right there. When you realize you've gotten yourself into that place, that's a wonderful feeling. And you can latch into it and you can say, geez, I'm really good at this kind of stuff. And yet, as we know, as we go through life, we still end up with those challenges coming. The resistance points pop up at the least expected times. And that, I think, is where,
yes,
that's what separates the best deliberate creators from everybody else, because they're the ones who are able to recognize quickly what's going on. Even if they don't know what the resistance point is, they can recognize what's going on and take some steps to identify that resistance point and play with it a little bit and ask it questions and thank it for the information and all that kind of stuff until you finally get to the root of what it is that it's actually trying to tell you. And once you know what it's trying to tell you, it's like, oh, I've been focusing on getting myself sick because I don't want to have to deal with doing these workshops and all the consequences that come out of it. Well, thank you for that information. I'm done with that one. Thank you. Goodbye. You know, that's what a deliberate creator can really do, is understand how to deal with them.
Yes. And something that I really want you to, or want me to continue to work on my life and help our audience see is, you know, I am recently, you know, I do a lot of work with foster care kids and, you know, one of the phenomenons that will happen and you can see it's not really a phenomenon, but you know, these kids a lot of times have been rejected by their own family. The system has treated them very poorly. And so by the time they're 12 or 13 and they're in the foster care system, they have developed a very huge resistance to trusting, because trusting has gotten them in a lot of trouble and from their perspective.
Right.
So when you're trying to find a 13-year-old home that, you know, it's very hard to find children at 13 a home, because people have a lot of preconceived ideas, a lot of resistance to having a 13-year-old, because there are often behaviors attached, and they're right in the middle. You know, the most perfect childhood is going to you're crazy when you're 13. Let's just be clear. You got hormonal craziness, and you know, you know, I mean, it's just a zoo, you know, and that's in a perfect setting. So when, imagine that somebody being in foster care. And so a couple of weeks ago that this, was a newer client that I only met with him one time, but it was really to help. I met with his therapist and him to sort of help the therapist break through that this kid has a chance to be adopted.
Wow.
And
going
to foster care. Yeah. And I'm going from a foster care placement to an adoptive placement. He'd been doing fine in the foster care placement, but the moment they mentioned, "We're considering adopting you, how do you feel about that?" he started acting the fool. It started being crazy.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, no, never mind. We don't want to adopt them. And so before this fell apart, I met with them. And so he, you know, of course, I walk in and he's a nice kid. And then as soon as and he's trying to figure out why this random dude just shows up to his therapist's appointment. And, I explained who I was and I said, I'm a life coach and would like to, you know, try to figure out and hear what's going on. And he got very defensive and he goes, "You don't know what I'm talking about. You don't know anything." And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't. You're right. I don't. I have no clue." And I just allowed him to be who he needed to be.
Right.
And so I kept saying, "What are you scared of?" And his response was, "I'm not scared of shit. I'm not scared of shit." And he just, and I said, "Oh, okay." And I just wouldn't let that go. I said, "But what you were doing fine. Now you're acting crazy. Did you take a crazy pill? Did you, you know, tell me what happened?" "Nothing happened. I'm the same person I've always been." And I said, are you afraid they're going to dump you now?" "I'm not afraid of anything." And then finally, after about 30 minutes of this drama and silliness, he just broke down crying. He said, what if they get rid of me too?"
Oh, man. Yeah.
And I said, "Well, there you are." I said, "What you're scared of is something that's already happened. Your resistance to the change, you're doing great." I said, "These people love you. They love everything you've been, but you can't all of a sudden just go from that to threaten to cut the cat's head off. That's a big jump from being this sweet kid. I'm going to cut the cat's head off." I said, "Sorry, we just can't do that." And he said, "I'm not going to cut the cat's head off." I said, "But that's what you told him." And he goes, "I know. So what was that about?" And so I helped him see where his fear of what has happened, his resistance to, he said, "Well, everything's fine. Why can't I just stay in foster care?" I said, "Because you can't." I said, if that's what you want, we can make that happen. I said, "But wouldn't you want somebody, this forever?" And so he was able to pretty much quickly see his own resistance to that change.
Good for him.
And at last report, he's back to who he was. He's no longer threatened to cut the cat's head off. He was never going to cut the cat's head off. It was a very effective tool to freak everybody out. They're back on course to adoption. And it was him able to see exactly what we're talking about. He wants nothing more than to be adopted, but he's more scared of it failing than he wants it.
Yeah.
And that's the key. That's sort of where you're at. That's where a lot of us get at. I'm more fearful of the failure of it than I am of the success of it.
Exactly.
And that's what drives it. That's resistance. That's where it's protected. He was protecting himself from himself, so to speak. And these are solid people. He's going to end up being adopted. At the same time, I said, yes, you're going to screw up. And yes, they're going to be pissed at you. And yes, this is going, that's what family does. It's going to not be perfect. And you're going to be angry and hate them one moment, but these people love you and you love them. Give them a chance. And this is we'll be all right. And it's just once again, a brilliant kid.
Mm-hmm.
Able to identify it, able to make immediate changes. I wish we could all do it that easily.
Wow, that's great. Good for him, too. That's excellent. And it's really interesting how you were describing this kid. You're describing what he's going through. And as you're describing it, it feels so familiar. I mean, not that all of us are in foster care, but all of us have been in that position. Now, you talked about how I was dealing with that with this local workshop thing I'm trying to put together. I know that feeling. I've heard life coaches and therapists describe that as a fear of success. And I guess you can kind of describe it that way. But what it really is, it's a fear of failure in the face of success. It's a fear that, I've got this great opportunity that I've thought of and I'm starting to create it, and I'm afraid I'm going to screw the whole thing up. And it's just going to go into hell in a handbasket, and everything's going to fall apart. That's what it's really about. It's a fear that in the face of success, you're going to fail.
Completely right, Walt. And one thing that and that's why I work so hard on reorganizing your thoughts about failure. If I do fail, it means I tried something new. If I do, where does failure, except from just, again, historical programming, why is it so scary? You can't become successful without failing along the way.
Yeah.
You can't. And so redefining that and not being fearful of it, and in fact, embracing the concept, I will fail today. You know I'll fail today. I fail every day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thank God I do. I'm stronger because of it.
Yeah.
And that's this concept that we're talking about when we're dealing with this is, again, a lot of it is just simply our perspective and where the resistance exists. When you quit resisting against the failure, resisting it, you're not even resisting against the failure. I just don't want to feel that way. What feeling?
Right.
You feel like you're successful? You feel want to, you know, I love that ability. I can be in control of my perspective of anything. The idea that the trauma of past failures, It just has us in a very protective mode versus accepting the trauma of past failures as strengthening events and saying, yeah, I'm going to be really good at this. I can handle whatever they throw my way. And this is where it's going to go. You're going to, when I wrote my book, The Bench, and the publisher I was working with, said, you need to be prepared that there's always going to be people critical. There's always people that are going to say something. There's always people you could go look on any post on Facebook and just see arguments that are so ridiculous. If our school closes because there's a snow day, 50% of the people are making smart aleck comments that they shouldn't have closed. The other people are arguing with the people on why they should have closed.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what we do.
Yep.
And it's just, you see all that. So instead of worrying about all that and worrying about all that noise in the background, we got to focus on our decision.
Yeah.
You know, I understand when the school closes, when there's snow on the ground here, all it will take is one child to be harmed because they didn't close. And then, you know, I would always rather err on caution. I don't care. It's what's one day of school. It doesn't matter. Err on caution. I don't get wound up. It is something that we are conditioned to do. We almost are conditioned to argue against ourselves, and that's where the resistance is. Resistance is arguing against your best interest often in your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like you say, you're never going to satisfy everybody. There's always going to be some minority that are going to find fault with anything that you put out there. It's just the way things are. And you can look at, go to an Amazon page. Go to a page where, any product that they're selling. Doesn't matter how popular the product is. You will find one-star reviews for it. And the one-star reviews, you can. I actually like to read one-star reviews when I'm checking out a product, which some people think is a little strange. Other people say, oh, yeah, I do the same thing. But the reason I like to check them out is if the one-star reviews don't seem all that terrible to me, I figure it must be pretty good.
I have, I was looking, and I actually did the same thing because it's one of the things I think is very unfair to any business or especially a doctor or therapist. And, I have a Justin's former pediatrician. I didn't like him. He didn't like me. I thought he wouldn't listen. I mean, he's just one of those doctors. I'm not, him and I get into not an argument, but it was a disagreement as a better term because it didn't get mean.
Yeah.
I just didn't like him, and I could tell he didn't like me. It's okay.
Yep.
Not everybody's going to do that.
Right.
He thinks I'm arrogant, and I think he's arrogant. So, okay.
Well, fair is fair. Here we go.
Exactly. So I went and got another doctor, and I canceled the appointment I had with him, and his nurse called, and she said, well, what happened? And I explained. She said, well, what can we do to solve this? I said, well, there's nothing. I said, I don't want to talk negatively. I found somebody that sees a little more like I do. I'm not a big fan of just you don't prescribe a medication to me for my child and then not take the time to explain it to me. I'm just not that guy. You're going to have to explain why that we're going to do that. And it's not me not trusting the doctor. It's just, I want to be informed. Hmm. And, so she said, well, please don't put a bad review on Google.
Oh dear.
And I said, I would never do that. I will never do that. First of all, when you're a doctor or a therapist and somebody gives you a bad review, due to the laws, the way they're written, you can't even really respond. You can't acknowledge that person was even a patient. So you're really helpless to defend.
Mm.
So I think the bias, very few people take the time to go online and say, I really had a great experience. Thank you. Most people are angry when they go online to review. So they're going to prove a point. So I try to always do positive reviews. If I have a negative comment, I will go to that company directly. Now, if their response is not good, I have given some negative reviews in the past, but it was always based on more the response. Everybody's going to mess up. It's their response to it is what matters to me.
Hmm.
And this is it's sort of the same thing. I look at the one-star reviews because most of the time it's reinforcing what a great product it is. Or, it's like, well, they were late sending me this or, that something bizarre. I was reading this one product one time. I forget what the product was. The guy's response was, UPS lost my package. Well,
right.
What does that have to do with this product?
Nothing
at all. nothing. And the merchant underneath said, we were unaware of this. We'll send another one out right away.
Mm-hmm.
And with no argument, we apologize. Well, I have no response. I don't know what happened after that. But I mean, the point is this one-star review guy, when you look at the rate. So there is that concept of there's always going to be the outside forces that don't see it the way you do. There's no way. And we're conditioned because of the anonymity of the internet. There's a lot less negative reviews that go face to face because of the uncomfortable nature of those,
right.
the online stuff. And that's where our society is right now. And that's, again, that goes sort of back to that conditioning. But I'm very much a believer that the negative reviews to me can often be the biggest indicator of a great product. Because if you can't come up with anything better than UPS was late shipping to me.
Exactly.
What does that have to do with the product?
Yeah, to me, that says that product's actually pretty good. That's the worst they could say about it? Dang, I'm buying two.
Yeah. Or one of my favorites is, this product caused my stomach to be upset. When clearly in the description, the first week you will have an upset stomach as you adjust to this product.
Yeah.
Well, it says it's going to give you an upset stomach. it gave you an upset stomach, and you're giving it a one star.
Yep.
You know, my other favorite, and this is hilarious because, you know, it's by very definition, this guy does this cleanse, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of these things, but it's sort of a all natural fruit and vegetable powder. And he said, you know, most people do report a stomach discomfort the first couple of days because you're getting a lot of microbes. And he had a great explanation of why.
Uh-huh.
And the first review on the product was, I had a lot of stomach upset the first 2 days. So you're saying it's an effective product because it's exactly what he says is going to happen.
Right.
But again, you know, it, that's how you see it. It's an amazing phenomenon in today's society.
In any society. I think it's been going on for decades, generations, centuries.
Yes.
It's been going on for a long, long time. Hey, Siraj raised an interesting question. And it was tied into the story that you were telling about the kid who was in foster care who was up for adoption. I think it also probably ties into your own experiences with adoption as well. But he says, it's a good conversation, but how about if you are not financially free, you're in debt? In this situation, you want to do something for foster kids. How can someone achieve that kind of impact with that kind of financial gap?
There's all kinds of ways of helping, and I think I'm understanding the situation, the question. First of all, I admire anybody. Thank you very much for acknowledging the need of our foster care kids. It is. I know right now, and I don't know where this gentleman is located, but I can speak to my area or pretty much anywhere.
I think he's in India, actually. He's in India.
Okay. Okay, so I don't know the situation in India, but in the United States, we have foster care homes all over the place. There's group homes. You wouldn't realize if you were able to even stop in and volunteer, if that's something you could do, and throw the ball, and India probably kick a soccer ball with the kids. Just spend time with them. Mm-hmm. An hour or two a week of just spending time with positive thought. Bring them a pizza. Teach them how to fish. Teach them how to, you know, just there's multiple things that can be done that don't cost money, and you can help show them value. The concept is they're often children that are put off to the side. They have no political voice because they're, again, the throwaway kids of society. So there's not a lot of advocacy for them. And again, in the United States, you could become a guardian ad litem. That's somebody who represents the best interest of the kid. It doesn't cost you any money to do that. Again, it costs you time to do that.
Right.
So within the rules and confines of how it works in India, I think that figuring out what you could do, often the financial stuff is the easiest. You can help just by being there. You can help collect kid book bags. You can help books. You can help I know a gentleman in Colorado that collected a bunch of old iPads and tablets and, you know, just sort of outdated stuff from his wealthy friends. And he packaged them up to send them all to a poor country to a poor city in Mexico for their school. Mm-hmm. I mean, your 10-year-old cell phone, smartphone, or, you know, 5-year-old smartphone has more power computer-wise than most computers that they have there. Mm-hmm. So something you would throw away even. And I'm laughing because I have a Galaxy S3 that's an old phone I just dug up the other day.
Yeah.
That's a supercomputer in some cities, you know.
Sure.
What I mean? So there's all kinds of things you can do, but looking at what you can do, this is a great example of resistance. Here's my impediment. I can't do that because I'm poor. Or I'm not saying poor. I can't do that because I have debts, or I can't do that because I don't have any resources. That's one thing or a few things out of a million things you could do. There's a million things you could do to help give value to help a foster care kid see their life has value.
And I really appreciate
the question. Because
I can give you some more information too, because I know a little bit about Siraj's situation. I believe he actually runs some kind of I don't know what the exact thing is. I don't know if it's an organization or a situation that's out of his home, but he actually helps people in need in his home or in his place, wherever he is. And he finds that there's never enough money to do the things that he needs to do to help them. So it's not just that he's going to help somebody who's already in another situation somewhere. He's providing the situation. And I think he's probably asking, how do I deal, you know, how can I attract more financial support for what it is I'm trying to do to help these people?
Oh, I see. Okay, that's even better clarity. And one of the things, first of all, outstanding work, by the way. Congratulations on you're obviously in a good vibration there. But we get to that point. I think anybody that is helping people, because I always wanted to help people, and I always wanted to be in a financial position to do that. But again, the resistance already, and again, this is what we talk about every week, the resistance is already in the question.
Mm-hmm.
My big problem is I don't have money to do what I want to do to help these people. How do I get money to help these people? The focus is on the financial stuff. How do I attract it? It's no different than how you attract it in your personal life, especially when you're doing it for something as worthy as what he's doing. I love that. But, you know, I assume we're on a joint Facebook group. You know, get it. I don't know if we do a description of what he does and do a GoFundMe page. I don't know if we collect a bunch of stuff here that we can send to him. But there's a lot of people that would be willing to help. There's a lot of resources out there to I know people that are looking to help people, but they want to make sure they're helping the right way.
Yes.
So how do we get that message out? How do we start attracting more? And that becomes the journey unto itself. No different than how do we attract money or financial success? We become mentally financially successful right now.
Mm-hmm.
We live as if we're financial. We live in an abundance, mentally with an abundance.
Yep.
And let's do that, and hopefully he can do that and continue to attract money to help these people that he's trying to help. A
right.
Very worthy cause. I'm really grateful that he's listening to us.
Yeah, that's great. That's fabulous. And as usual, as we're closing in on the conclusion of the program, the questions are starting to flow. I'll try to get one question in here. You have about a minute and a half to answer it. But Anita asks, switching topics entirely, how can I attract the man of my life?
So you're giving me a whole minute and a half to answer that.
A whole minute and a half?
Wow,
I know. Isn't
well,
that fair?
Yeah. Well, I think that my minute and a half answer simply is going to be we have to identify what is the resistance to you attracting that person into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that always defer, you know, I think The Secret talks about relationships pretty well. There's some really good stuff with Abraham Hicks as well. Mike Dooley has a couple of things as well. And maybe next week we can put that topic, that question at the front and really sort of address it, because it is one of the top two questions we get.
Right.
Relationships and money. And I think how do I attract it is, first of all, how do I stop attracting what I don't want? Let's
yes.
look at that. And,
right.
Because that's where you're going to find your resistance. And once we identify the resistance, we can break that down. I would love to answer that more in depth next week.
Yeah, I think so too. I'll simply add that Anita, in my admittedly limited experience, I don't have anywhere near the experience Joel has with his life coaching practice. But in my limited experience, anyone who's asking about relationship questions, particularly with trying to create the relationship, get it started, find the right person, that person 99.9% of the time has work to do on themselves that needs to be done. And I think that's kind of what you were pointing at there, Joel, that, you know, you might
yeah.
want to take a little time just taking a little inventory and asking yourself, you know, where could I be focusing attention on building myself up, building my self-esteem, feeling more self-confident so that I can attract the man of my dreams? And what does my man of my dreams look like? What are his characteristics? You know, What is this person about? You know, what are the things that I'm looking for? That combination, I find, is what's at the core of it. But again, I'm just the I'm just the host here. Joel's the expert.
Well, no, you're dead on, Walt, and that's exactly what we have to look at. That's, you know, what are we not attracted? What's in us right now? And it gets really complex, or it could get really simple. But we can talk about how to break that down a little more next week.
Yeah, let's do
that. Figure out how to get there.
That sounds good. Okay, so we have our work cut out for us next week. Subscribe to us by visiting our webpage at loatoday.net. Just click the appropriate icon and follow through. It'll create a subscription and set you up to get all of our episodes delivered right to your smartphone. thank you for all the questions to our live stream listeners. Thank you also to our regular podcast listeners, because without you, we wouldn't have much of a podcast. And thank you, Joel. I mean, I love doing this every week, and I look forward to doing it again next week.
I'll talk to you next week, buddy. Thank you for everything.
All right. Thank you, too. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.